Studio 360.
Today on Studio 360, we're looking at American dance in a bunch of different flavors, such as the choreographer Donald Byrd. For decades now, he's used dance as a way to illuminate what it means to be black in America. Sometimes his work is gentle. More often, though, his dances are bracing and arresting. And as he approaches his 70th birthday, Donald Byrd still pretty relentlessly uses his art to provoke conversation about fairness and justice and, most of all, about racism. We dispatched reporter Marcy Silma to have some conversations with Donald Byrd and to watch him do what he does.
Donald Byrd doesn't sugarcoat his political message. He calls his current artistic season woke. Wake up and stay woke.
Given the current climate that we live in, we have a responsibility to be awake, and we don't have the luxury of going back to sleep because things have changed. You know, we don't get to settle in and go, oh, that's taken care of, and now I can just kind of go back to being oblivious.
This fall, Byrd and his Seattle-based troupe, Spectrum Dance Company, have been touring a work called Rap on Race. Like so much of Byrd's art, it combines political commentary with a passion to provide historical context, all wrapped up in technically demanding choreography.
Sometimes it's like purely in the movement as opposed to some kind of intellectual kind of thing, even though maybe it comes from something intellectual.
In this case, a 1970 conversation between the anthropologist Margaret Mead and writer James Baldwin.
But some of the preachers told me that I should never give my seat to a white woman. And this gave me a tremendous conflict for a while, because somehow standing up for a white woman would have seemed to be an act of servility. I solved this problem very neatly by never sitting down in the subway.
That's Byrd as Baldwin. He and the actress who portrays Mead sit on a platform above the stage. Their conversation is interspersed with dance segments performed to Charles Mingus's The Black Saint and the Sinner Lady. The dancers punctuate the heated dialogue with sharp kicks and staccato arm punches. Critics use terms like roiling or provocative to describe Rap on Race. Seattle-based dance writer Sandra Kurtz says that could apply to most of the dances Byrd creates.
The original admonition in modern dance, American modern dance, was to dance who you are.
But Kurtz says Byrd does more than dance his identity. His pieces express his love and appreciation for other choreographers who helped make him who he is.
When I think about his work as a choreographer, it always reminds me of a Venn diagram. He's in the middle of a lot of different things. Yes, I think always and primarily he would identify himself as an African-American choreographer, but it is way more than that. He is not Bill T. Jones. He was not Alvin Ailey. He was not B.B. Miller. He's not Kyle Abraham. He's not Ralph Lemon. He's Donald Byrd. He takes elements from all of these different aspects of dance that he experienced first as a performer and then as a member of the community, and he's putting them together.
As a boy, Byrd played music and performed in school theatrical productions. His passion for dance really goes back to the first time he saw the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater. The company performed its signature work, Revelations, set to traditional African-American spirituals. Byrd, who grew up in the Jim Crow South, appreciated the music, but he says the songs represented a past he didn't want to acknowledge.
I had not said it out loud, but the whole idea of the Negro spirituals, even though I thought they were beautiful, I did not want to hear them, because they represented slavery to me. What Alvin Ailey had done was he had transformed the pain of slavery into something that was magnificent and beautiful, just the way the spirituals did, and I understood what they were. At the end of it, the audience was standing up and cheering. I was too. Tears were streaming down my face, and I thought, anything that can make people feel this way, that's what I want to do.
Donald Byrd spent most of his childhood in Clearwater, Florida. He felt protected by the black community there. But in 1967, Byrd went north to attend Yale on a scholarship, and moving to New Haven was like a slap in the face.
I had never been called the N-word to my face, but I got called the N-word in New Haven by somebody driving by, and they threw a chair at me. Regardless of whether I was academically prepared for it, culturally, I was definitely not prepared.
Yale was all male at the time and mostly upper class. Even the other African-American students he met had attended elite prep schools. Byrd felt like a fish out of water. He tried to polish his rough edges. He read voraciously. He attended theater, played flute in the college orchestra. After he met a beautiful ballerina, he added dance to that artistic mix.
You know, I was fighting against it because it was not manly. That was kind of a message. That's not a manly thing. And then also, my grandmother said to me, "Why do you want to do that? You have a mind."
But by the late 1970s, Byrd dropped out of college and moved to New York to study at the Alvin Ailey School. Despite his admiration for Ailey, Byrd was more drawn to the city's thriving contemporary downtown dance scene.
I loved Alvin Ailey. I loved that work. I loved what it was, but I knew it was not for me. That's not how I wanted to dance. One of the reasons was it was not accommodating to my body.
He was more comfortable with the cutting-edge choreographers he met downtown. Plus, he'd started to make his own dances. Eventually, Byrd founded his own company, Donald Byrd the Group. It was a dance laboratory, a place for him to figure out how to infuse social commentary into his art. In 1991, Byrd shook critics and audiences with an evening-length piece called The Minstrel Show. He appropriated 19th-century minstrel show format. The dancers performed in blackface and woolly wigs, jangling tambourines. Byrd also solicited racist jokes from the audience, and he read them from the stage.
It was shocking, it was disturbing, and it was revealing to people.
The minstrel show got mixed responses in New York. Byrd decided to take it on the road.
In San Francisco, people were like stunned. You know, because San Francisco is kind of the home of political the Bay Area of political correctness. People sat through it and they had a hard time. And I was fearful for my life, actually, in some ways, because people had such strong reactions to it.
Audiences, black and white, may have balked at the material, but critics loved it. The Minstrel Show won a Bessie Award in 1992. Dance writer Sandra Kurtz.
He's not afraid of offending people. Or rather, I think he's not afraid of showing people how they might be offending the world.
What I feel like my job is to kind of put stuff out there so people are asked to talk, to kind of put their fears aside or to put all of that stuff aside. It will stay there unless it's acknowledged and talked about.
And that's why almost 20 years after its debut, Byrd revived the minstrel show in Seattle. He was outraged by the high-profile shootings of Michael Brown and Trayvon Martin. Byrd asked his dancers to read from transcripts of George Zimmerman's arraignment in the 2012 Trayvon Martin shooting.
I just reported that there was a suspicious person in the neighborhood. The dispatcher, whoever answered the phone, asked me where they went, and I said I wasn't sure.
Fausta Rivera, a member of Byrd's Seattle troupe for the past 5 years, danced in the revival.
It's one of the shows where you were the most conscious of the energy receiving from the audience, which is like a little to none, because you have to realize that they're like in a state of shock.
Rivera says the minstrel show also overwhelmed its performers.
It's just one of the most difficult things I think I've had to do on stage, for sure. That show requires a lot. It requires like your whole person. Because for us, right, for the month, 2 months process that we have to stage it, there's a lot of conversation involved. There's a lot of conversation about all the things, about like Donald gives us a day where we just put on the blackface makeup and we sit with it, right? And we sit with each other and we talk about what that feels like and the pain that it holds kind of on its own as a thing, and then also like the reality of it.
Go.
On a foggy morning, Rivera and fellow dancer Michelle Dooley rehearse a duet in the company's studio, an old bathhouse on the shores of Lake Washington. Byrd watches from a folding table, his black framed glasses perched on the end of his nose. Bird Seattle Company's spectrum includes 14 dancers. Half are people of color. It's been part of his mission to build a racially diverse professional dance troupe. Bird came to Seattle in 2002. Like so many of his fellow artists, he'd had a hard time raising money in New York after 9/11. Ultimately, he decided to close his company there and head to the West Coast. But Bird's problems in New York actually go back to the mid-1980s.
And I think it's important to say this. I needed a way to deal with the various kinds of pain that I was in. And I was in pain around not having things, material things, like no money, no. I was in pain around wanting to succeed at what I was doing and that, you know, you have to work to succeed at it.
Bird numbed his pain with drugs, marijuana, cocaine, and alcohol. He missed meetings, showed up late for gigs.
And then I auditioned for, Robert Wilson was there doing a project that was a part of a larger piece that he was developing for the Olympics in Los Angeles. So I auditioned for that. I got in, so I was doing that. But of course, I screwed that up too. We had a matinee one day, and I was late for the matinee because I'd been so stoned the night before, I didn't wake up.
He'd hit bottom.
I was really high when I was doing. So high that I couldn't even feel my limbs. And so half the time when I was dancing, I was saying, please God, don't let me break my neck out here because I couldn't feel anything.
The critics noticed, and for the first time, they panned his performance. That shook Bird to his core. He checked himself into rehab. His friends covered the cost of 6 weeks of residential treatment, the first of several stints in rehab. When he got back to New York, his career was in shambles. Nobody would take his calls.
It was like nothing. It was really ashes and rubble. Everything had been destroyed. All goodwill, everything. I went to meetings every day. I went every day, sometimes twice a day. I took class every day.
Eventually, a few sympathetic choreographers threw work his way, and that's how an old friend from the Ailey School saw him perform. She asked him to come make a dance for the company. Mr. Ailey, that's what Bird called him, would wander into the studio to watch.
One day, I was doing something. He turned to me, and he looked at me, and he said, "You do such marvelous things." When Mr. Ailey said that to me, I go, maybe I need to start saying I am a choreographer.
Ailey hired Bird to make another dance. It was the lifeline he'd needed. This spring, Donald Bird unveils his latest full-length work, Strange Fruit, set to Billie Holiday's classic 1939 song about lynching.
Southern trees bear strange fruit.
Bird was inspired by a trip to the newly opened National Memorial to Peace and Justice in Montgomery, Alabama, a 6-acre monument to African Americans who'd been lynched.
I was kind of numb when I was there, to be really honest, when I think about it, because I was overwhelmed. The design of the memorial with the slabs would suggest bodies hanging. I mean, just the number of them and the kind of insight that I had or things I started to understand. For white people, I think it's important to understand the level, how much of it that happened, and how it was sanctioned. One of the things that's difficult for many white people is to acknowledge the level of brutality that a specific group of people that they're a part of is responsible for.
A lot of his work is ahead of its time, in that people aren't always ready to receive it, even though they say, I'm liberal, I'm progressive, I want to make change, I want to move the needle forward.
Seattle choreographer Jade Solomon Curtis was a standout performer during her 4 years dancing with Bird's company.
It's not Disney, and he's not going to make it this whimsical way of experiencing the world. He's making it real.
Solomon Curtis says while Bird is often hard on audiences, he also can be extremely tough on his dancers.
Well, I don't want to paint a picture that all of my experiences at Spectrum were just these beautiful, amazing things, because they weren't.
Several years ago, Spectrum's board of directors suspended Bird just before a show was scheduled to open. They'd heard reports that he'd verbally abused his production staff. The suspension ignited a rift among board members, but ultimately Bird was reinstated. Nobody's ever discussed this on the record, but rumors continue to swirl, and that irritates Solomon Curtis.
It's kind of like family, in that I can talk bad about my family, but you better not.
She acknowledges that Bird pushed dancers hard in rehearsal. He says it was in pursuit of his artistic vision, a drive for perfection that surprised many young dancers.
You know, there's a whole generation of people that tell, oh, you're so special. You get a sticker or something for everything you do.
Meanwhile, his artistic star was rising beyond the small contemporary dance world. Bird was getting hired for new projects in opera and musical theater. In 2006, Bird was nominated for a Tony Award for his work on the Broadway adaptation of The Color Purple.
I'm gonna take a deep breath. Gonna hold my head up. Gonna put my shoulders back.
After 5 decades of dance making, Donald Byrd is happy for all the awards and opportunities that have come his way. But he says it's the hard times that have taught him the most.
When you get knocked down, you just get up. But I can't imagine not getting up. I can't imagine it.
Donald Byrd is artistic director of the Spectrum Dance Company in Seattle, where this spring they'll present a series called The Wokeness Festival. Marcy Silman produced that story. She's a reporter at KUOW in Seattle.